And I think that the world is going to be a very dire place if we just keep taking from the world, from the earth, from each other. We have to think about giving, and I think it's hard to do that. And that takes courage.
Welcome to Brave New Girl Podcast. I'm Lou Hamilton, and I'm an artist, author, and founder of the podcast guesting agency Brave New Girl Media. If you're interested in the health and well-being of people and the planet, then you're in the right place. My guests are change makers, focused on doing their bit towards the greater good and showing us that even taking small actions in the right direction, we can have a big impact on the world we live in. So, all aboard the mothership. Let's do this together. My guest this week is Anna Anderson, founder of Kindred, a co-working space in West London that's passionate about building community with real-life human connection and is inspired by the openness, warmth and connectivity that's created by gathering around a campfire in a way that respects and celebrates people and the planet. Welcome, Anna, to Brave New Girl Podcast.
Hi Lou, I'm well, thank you. Thank you so much for having me here.
So you are actually on the other side of the world. You're in New York, but normally you're just down the road. So you have the most amazing space, Kindred. Can you tell us about it?
Yeah, sure. So Kindred is, we call it an open house. It's in real terms, it's a really big, beautiful, three-story Grade II listed building, sort of tucked away in the heart of Hammersmith. It's sort of this hidden gem of a building that people who've lived in the area for 20, 30 years, they sort of are surprised to discover it. They're like, I'd never knew this building existed. And I think the reason for that is it was neglected for quite a long time. We took it on in 2018, sort of late 2018, did a full fit out. And we wanted to create a community space. The idea was about creating one of these third spaces that bring people together, sort of addressing the very lonely city that we're living in, how hard it is to meet new people. We wanted to create this kind of space where it's not quite work, it's not quite home, it's somewhere in between, where you can bring yourselves, meet the people that you need to meet, whether it's personally or professionally, and also do all the things that you want to do, like, you know, relax, eat and drink, go to events, learn, and obviously do some work as well. So we try and do it all. We're very open. We're all about inclusion. We're not an exclusive members club. We did try to be a members club at one point. It didn't work for us. It didn't fit. And we also felt it wasn't really aligned with our values of just bringing everyone together and allowing people just to use the space and let it be theirs. So yeah,
I found you actually through another guest, Isha Shabra, who was on the podcast, and she was doing a talk to promote her book Working to Restore, all about regeneration and regenerative business, and she invited me, and the talk was at this place, Kindred in Hammersmith, and I was like, oh, that's good, I can cycle there, it's near me, and when I cycled past, I was like, how many millions of times have I cycled past here and never noticed? And it is an absolute gem. It's the most gorgeous bit of architecture in amongst kind of new stuff. So why I hadn't noticed it, it's like I'm meant to be a visual person and there you are. I'm going around completely blind, not looking. But it was a joy to find. And quite, I guess, you were thinking very kind of far ahead. This was pre-pandemic. And yes, it was, you know, it has always been, I guess, a quite a lonely city being living in London. But that was something that really hit home for people when the pandemic happened. So how was that for you as you were, you know, you just done it up and opened it and then we all went into lockdown?
Yeah, it wasn't part of the business plan, not gonna lie. but I do think that it was really interesting to observe. We sort of opened Kindred talking very proudly about addressing loneliness. And it wasn't really a cool thing. We sort of advised not to, because it's not a very sexy thing to say, hey, lonely people, come into the building. But I think it was, what was so interesting is during the pandemic, you know, obviously we closed like everyone else, but we were sort of observing what was going on in the conversation. We were contributing to the conversation at the time. And we were seeing more and more people were talking about loneliness kind of for the first time for them, and kind of realizing that it was a thing that it was okay to talk about. I think everyone has felt it from time to time throughout their lives, or all the time throughout their lives, but it's never really been an acceptable thing to speak about until the pandemic, I think. So that was really interesting. And now I'm seeing a couple more spaces similar to us who are now talking about addressing loneliness, which was kind of, you know, we were definitely the first to be talking about it so openly before. And now it's much more mainstream, which is a great thing. You know, we're just happy that people are talking about it more. And there have been people along the way that have been doing amazing work around loneliness. But I think one thing that we kind of don't really think about is just like the practicality of it. You know, we sort of see people building these benches in the street and be like, come and sit to next to a stranger and not be lonely. And for me, that's so unappealing, because I don't know what that conversation is going to be. It's going to waste my time. You know, I'm very much an advocate for building physical spaces where people can actually come together and also engage in the way that they feel comfortable too, because I think we kind of think that loneliness is an introvert game. It's actually not true. It can hit people, you know, introvert, extrovert, along the spectrum. And so we've created a space that is really good for both kinds of, well, all kinds of personalities. So you can like dip in and just be around people. You don't have to engage with them. Or you can go and meet everyone in the building and, you know, tell everyone who you are and what you're about. And it kind of suits both. So, but I do think we need, as human beings, we need these physical spaces to enable that connection. Because otherwise, if you're just going up to people on the street and talking to people, it's just a bit weird. And people don't feel comfortable with that. And, you know, there's obviously, you know, a safety element as well. So we need to kind of be more intentional with our spaces, I think.
It was quite interesting, the change in people through the pandemic. And as we sort of came out and then went back in and then coming out again, lots of people did experience probably loneliness for the first time, because they weren't able to, you know, maybe they were much more extrovert or much more, you know, people, and then suddenly kind of, you know, in the house on their own or their families and not being able to have those connections. But what I have noticed is people coming back out, that actually that's an adjustment as well for people across the spectrum. So how have you managed that with people that they want to, or they're a bit uncertain, or, you know, it's quite a strange time, isn't it?
Yeah, really interesting question. I think people engage in life in different ways. So some people kind of go full throttle. They, you know, take everyone's details. They want to know who's in the room. And I would perhaps generalize those people as extroverts, though they're not necessarily all the time. And then there are people who kind of know they need people and around them, but don't necessarily want to engage all the time. It's quite stressful for them to have to like be on socially. I do think that, you know, what I've learned is that community and togetherness and tackling loneliness needs to be an intentional activity for people. I think that we are sort of surprised that we've created the society that enables such loneliness, and loneliness is now considered a pandemic. It's considered a health issue. It does have impact on our physical health and our mental health, obviously, but physically it impacts us as well. And I think we're kind of surprised that it's happened, and we're like, oh, okay, maybe if I talk about it, then it will be addressed. And actually, that's not the case. Like, yes, it's the first step, but the second step is like this ritual. You've got to really go and you've got to really tackle it for yourself, because it's not just going to happen. You know, people who are in loving relationships, people who have friendships, people who have a busy work kind of life, sometimes those people can also experience really intense loneliness because of that lack of connection and feeling seen and feeling that sense of belonging. There's so much more I can say about this, about like how we've created this individualistic society, and that was sort of a, you know, counterbalance to the very kind of oppressive community structures we had in the past. But I think now people are kind of like shocked and they don't know how to deal with it. But I would say just intentional engagement in whatever way feels comfortable for you, because for some it's going to feel very different, right? So, but it is that regular showing up to things and being prepared to have a conversation, because I do think that introvert or extrovert, if you feel lonely, it's not going to be addressed unless you actually go out of your front door and get in front of people and do it on a regular basis, because that's how you start to feel like part of something, that ritualistic getting together, being together, being seen, being recognized. And it is work. And I think people don't like to admit that it's going to be work to feel connected and feel belonging, but it is. And if you look at every kind of strong community structure. Religion is a really great example of this. You know, I grew up going to church. I don't anymore, but I remember every Sunday you turn up, you show up, and if you don't show up, people are gonna check on you and be like, hey, are you okay? Why didn't you come to church? You know, and you have these rituals together. You sing together, you pray together, you kind of talk about your big fears and your big hopes, and that is such a strong community structure. And you see that all through different different belief systems and faith systems, and also like in sports clubs and like, you know, all these things where you gather together. It is an intentional, you have to show up. And I think that's kind of what I've really understood about COVID, is that we weren't able to show up, we weren't able to put that work in. And so even if you wanted that connection, even if you just couldn't, you weren't allowed. So that was really hard for people, I think.
I think that's a very interesting point, the idea that, you know, we did used to have religion, sort of most people had religion in one form or another. And that was very structured, and you didn't have to think about it, and you belonged just because that's what was the structure of the community that you were in. And so, as you say, you would turn up on a Sunday, or there would be events and you'd go to those and you'd support and you'd raise money for the church or whatever the thing was. And so now having to kind of think harder at that, it's quite interesting how you've started to create that in at Kindred. I know that, you know, I am an introvert and I'm very happy working on my own most of the time, but I know that I need from time to time to go and get my energy from other people, and then I absolutely feel fed and ready to go back into my little cave again. And other people work the other way around. But the fact that you had an event that I was able to go to, I had a couple of chats with people that led on to having some more meetings at Kindred, that then led on to hearing about the festival that you had, which I then went to. And the way that that was set up was really interesting on the evening that I went. And we were sort of paired up with strangers and got to talk with somebody and connect with somebody in a way that you wouldn't if you were just sort of turning up at a co-working space or whatever. So I think that these touch points that you're creating there are really necessary and very helpful for people to be able to start to form a kind of, it's not a religion, it's a way of connecting, and it's a way of having community. And so with that, how do you feel that, you know, you're definitely embedded in the local location in Hammersmith where you are, and so how do you encourage that but also have a wider outreach?
Yeah, interesting. I mean, so yes, we are very focused on our local neighborhood in Hammersmith, and naturally so, because that's our business. You know, we need to draw people into the building, and often it's hard to get people to you know, hop on a tube. It's like it's sort of the immediate walking distance. But I do think that sort of the message that we're sending out is that community is not dependent on the space. You know, it's not that some spaces can build community and some others can't. I think that the message that we try and send out is that, look, if you show up, if you get involved, if you sort of, and I don't mean get involved in sort of a full throttle, like, you know, extrovert kind of get involved. I mean, just literally just showing up and taking part and being interested and going to an event, or, you know, or coming out of your front door. I think that can tackle this sense of feeling so alone in this world. Because even just being around people who are interested in the same things as you is a good thing for us. You know, there's a lot of evidence now saying that actually our, like, longevity is dependent almost entirely on how much human-to-human interaction and connection we have. So I think that anything that encourages that is good. And we sort of send out that message that, look, we're not the only people who should be doing this work. It should be everybody. Any space is important. And I think it doesn't necessarily have to be like a community space or a space that is about building community. It could be a great restaurant or a pub or, like I say, a sports club or a youth centre or a local park. And you see these spaces that have this little magic, like, fairy dust on them, where people just come over and over and over to hang out with other people. A really good example is sort of the parks here in New York, where there's chessboards and these guys sit there pretty much all day playing chess, and people just come and they play chess together, or And they don't necessarily have to know each other, but there is a sense of, yeah, friendship and companionship, which is so beautiful. And you sort of see, and I think so it's just like finding those things that work for you. Like going to see some amazing like live music. You don't necessarily have to talk to people. You can just be there and enjoy that shared experience. I think you feel part of something. There's this really interesting bit of concept that I read about where a really strong sense of community can build within times of crisis. So if people are kind of, and they can be kind of a small crisis or a big crisis, but where if you're stuck on a train, for example, and the train's been halted and you're in this kind of cabin for a really long time, and you sort of then start talking to people and you have this sense of like forced community there, which is quite interesting. But I do think that this is just something that we should be talking about and being more intentional with, and that can be from Hammersmith and beyond.
So, how did it come to be you that created this amazing space? What is it about you and the your kind of your makeup, your background that led you on the path to this?
I sort of fell on it accidentally. I don't think it was like for all my chat about being intentional with community, I don't think I was particularly intentional creating this space. I mean, maybe I was. I think so I started as a social worker at professionally speaking. So I was practicing in London, sort of very sort of statutory work, child protection. I worked with young people in gangs. I worked with, domestic violence, mental health, addiction, lots of different things. And it was very sort of individualistic sort of approach. So you go family, 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 and open and close a case, open and close a case. And you sort of just kind of are rolling on this sort of very firefighting is the way that I kind of described it. And I got really interested in this concept of community social work that was kind of a thing in the 80s, but never really extended beyond that, where these social workers would basically go and embed themselves in a community that they had repeated, problems. And they'd be like, what's going on here? And they would try and address it from a structural, systemic level with the families, with the people that lived there. And it was a much more coordinated community approach, which, you'd still get the odd, severe incident that you'd have to deal with. But I think overall, the community were more interested in actually helping themselves. And they'd be the best people to say what we need as a community is, somewhere for our kids to play after school, somewhere that, better lighting so it's a bit safer, access to this and this and this. So I was really interested in this, and I was so like annoyed that there wasn't that approach these days, because God, what an amazing thing. And so initially I was kind of interested in that sort of going in that direction in my career. But I looked at the system around me. It's very bureaucratic. It's quite slow. You've got to work your way up to the top and then you can make change. You can't really make change from the bottom. And I'm quite a scrappy, ambitious person, and I'm impatient, I think is the word. And so I was like, okay, well, maybe I'll start a charity that kind of does that. And I thought, no, I don't want to do a charity because I'll spend my life raising money. And I would be so bad at that. I just knew I would totally, I would, yeah, that wasn't for me. So then I looked at a business model, and it's not, the irony is not lost on me that what we've created is quite a bougie affair. It's, it's got lots of brass and marble, and we sell champagne, we sell cocktails. And this is not for the demographic that I was typically working with. However, I would say that loneliness, community is a human need. It does not discriminate loneliness. It is, it touches everybody. And I wanted to build something that was sustainable, that could create jobs, that could help revive a community, help revive sort of an area in London. And I think we're kind of on the way to doing that, which is great. And believe it or not, my social work hat rarely comes off with running a big team. And also just kind of thinking more broadly about like how we as a business are impacting our community. What more can we be doing sort of on the community level? The hospitality side of things, I hadn't really sort of anticipated. It sounds funny, but yeah, so I don't come from hospitality yet. I now run a hospitality business. So I think that was sort of like, oh, I want to feed people. I want people to have fun. And so, okay, we'll do food and we'll do drink. And then I'm sort of managing this business that I actually have no experience in, which is quite interesting. But your team is key. You know, if you hire good people, then they'll help you. So yeah, it was sort of a happy accident that Kindred is what it is. And I think my mindset is very, I think I'm quite a chaotic worker. I'm not very, I don't like a to-do list. I never finish a to-do list. You know, I sort of go into a situation and try and make sense out of the chaos, which is much more my style. Nightmare as a manager, but quite fun, I think, as well.
So what came first? Was the home of Kindred, did that find you, or were you nursing this idea of community and then looking for the space?
Oh, that's interesting. So I was looking for a space for a while. I would say for about a year and a half, looking for the right space. And it's quite difficult. Anyone who has searched for bricks and mortar, you know, for premises, if you haven't got any kind of business background, no landlord is going to look at you. You also need to recognize, this is a little tip for anyone who's looking for a physical space in the commercial world. Most properties don't actually ever go onto the market. So if you're looking on, like, you know, the Rightmove or the Rightmove equivalents for commercial properties, you're not going to find anything that's really worth having, because all of these deals are done behind the scenes between landlords and agents. So I was struggling to find a place. I did find that I adapted the Kindred dream, the Kindred model, to each new space that I was sort of fixated on at the time. So it changed, because I thought the space needs to mirror what's going on. We need to think about, you know, what we can physically do in this space and what feels right and everything. But I found Bradmore House through an agent. And how it works is they send out your idea to the ether, to all these commercial landlords. And these landlords then are like, oh yeah, I want that business in my tenant mix. I want that in as part of the sort of the area that we're trying to develop. And so it was quite interesting, because I actually had people kind of pitching for Kindred, which was quite cool. So yeah, and including the landlords of Bradmore House, which was really, really run down, needed a big old renovation. You know, it needed a new lease of life. And Hammersmith also, you know, it's not the easiest area to operate in. And I think that, you know, the landlords there who own a lot of the properties, you know, they wanted to bring in someone, a big hitter, who could, you know, start making some change. And I think we're sort of quite proud of what we're doing in Hammersmith, to be honest. So yeah, it was interesting. But the concept definitely changed, you know, according to the building, because the building needs to speak, you know, they need to be in harmony. So yeah, it was an interesting process.
I like the fact that you had to regenerate the building to create a home for Kindred. And, you know, we've talked a lot about regeneration and regenerative business and the whole kind of idea of looking after people and the planet. And so once you'd created this amazing space, how did you then develop Kindred to be a business that would grow and support the environment and the people?
Oh yes, it's a great question, Lee. Yeah, I think basically you have to acknowledge to yourself, when you start a business, especially in hospitality, but anything that sells anything, you are accepting that you are harming the environment. You have to understand that first of all, and then you can think about ways to address that. You know, every time that we order food, you know, we're adding to that supply chain. We're an extra stop on that delivery truck. We're taking resources from the ground, plants and animals and everything. We're selling them in our restaurant, and we're heating the building, and we're cooling the building, and we are impacting on the environment. And I don't want to pretend that we're this, you know, fantastic eco lodge where we've done everything perfectly, because we just haven't. That's just not the case. It's a big old Grade Two listed building, originally built in the 1700s, and it, you know, we try our best to make it as efficiently run as possible. And I'll tell you a little bit about that. But I think anyone, yeah, you have to kind of acknowledge to yourself that you are harming the environment when you open, because that's just how the market, you know, that's how the market is. So then it's about, okay, so what can I be more proactive with? And it's and you know, we've spoken about this, it's not just about sustainability anymore. It is about regeneration, which, you know, sustainability, you know, yes. Yeah. So the things we're doing, we've obviously put in the secondary glazing. We're looking at putting solar panels on. We recycle our food waste. We minimize our waste anyway by like the dishes that we have on the menu that are like, you know, we use up things, we feed our staff with anything that's going to go out. So we, you know, we have very, very minimal waste, you know, but it's all, you know, we do rely on energy, and we have to kind of think about that. For me, yes, there's the environmental stuff that we're doing, that we're being more proactive with. I would like to be doing more. So we are, like I said, we're looking at installing solar panels onto the building, which for me would be a financial investment that might outlive Kindred. So it might benefit, you know, future occupants, but I think I'm okay with that. And, you know, we're thinking about ways just to kind of help the building sort of modernize and improve. And I think that you have to be proactive as a business owner, because the government is not going to make you do anything. I mean, our government currently is definitely not going to, you know, it's not going to twist your arm and be like, you've got to be better. So you have to be proactive if you care about this stuff as a business owner, and you've got to invest as well. You've got to spend the money. But I think for me, the thing that I'm most proud of in terms of the regeneration part is twofold. Is one is my team and how we look after our staff. And I think kind of interrupting this status quo in hospitality where people are treated badly, they're treated like, you know, numbers on a sheet rather than human beings. And I think that we take a lot of pride in looking after our people and leading the team in a way that is human first, and you know, respecting that work is not and should not be the priority for people. I think that has had the benefit of, you know, impacting their lives, and people have stayed with us for much longer than they perhaps would usually. And I think also then thinking about the local community, you know, I think that we see ourselves as not just a business that takes, we also give back, we give out. So we kind of look after other local, you know, offerings, and we sort of help support them and sort of promote them to our community. You know, during COVID, we made donations to local schools to buy laptops for kids. You know, it's sort of, I think when you're kind of a big old bricks and mortar venue within a community, I think you kind of have a duty to look around you and contribute rather than just take. Because, you know, as soon as customers walk into your door rather than someone else's, you're taking from them. So you've got to kind of support each other. And I think those networks can get really strong and really powerful. And then the community becomes stronger together if you work together. So yeah, I think that's a rambly response to your question, but I think regeneration is not just about, you know, planting trees. It is about thinking more systemically about how you are in the world and what you can give out.
And I think that, you know, what you said about having an impact first, I mean, that is what we are as humans. We are having an impact on a lesser or greater degree. Mm. And, you know, we are where we are. So what is it that we do moving forward to mitigate what we've done in the past and the impact that we're having now? And, you know, we are always going to have an impact. That is just the nature of being human on the planet. Mm-hmm. But I'm really interested in the way that you talked about how we were much more individualistic and competitive. And I think that this is part of the kind of regenerative picture, is that we are we will have to be much less fast growth and more coming together to change things and work for people and planet. And so with that in mind and big picture thinking, what's your vision for the future?
Okay, so I think, yeah, it's interesting. I get asked a lot, like, okay, so what's next? Are you going to open more sites and all this kind of thing? I think, look, like, There's definitely a scenario where I love buildings, I love spaces, I love business. I really, really enjoy working in this area. I don't necessarily think that we need to be growing at all costs. I'm a very big believer in this, that businesses should not, like, the aim of starting a business should not be to grow as big as possible. And I think that's quite a controversial thing for an entrepreneur to say. Most entrepreneurs are like, growth is good. and that's it. And the aim is to get as big as possible and then to sell or to go public. And that's the aim. And I think people have kind of forgotten that businesses can be about more than that. And they could be about sustaining a community. They can be about contributing. They can be about bringing joy, and that can be about bringing joy to myself as the entrepreneur, to my team, to my community that sort of enjoy Kindred for all the different reasons. So I am motivated by those things more so than growth at all costs, because I think with growth at all costs, I mean, we've seen it, you know, we see it now. There's all these chains that grew, you know, they had a beautiful little site. I mean, I remember when Jamie's, you know, started when I was a kid, and we would go to Jamie's and it'd be like amazing Italian food, it was so good. And then it went boom. And then it, you know, it collapsed. And I think you kind of see it, and you're seeing it with all these other chains and all these, like, you know, it's super sad because they've just gone huge in times of plenty, and then they hadn't planned for the fact that the world has changed and is changing and will continue to change. So yeah, so costs of, you know, for Kindred, you know, our costs have gone up. You know, it's a hard time. We're paying our staff more than we had, you know, than we had at the beginning, but by a lot more. You know, our costs are high. It's hard to make money in this kind of sector. But I think if I were to say, you know, what's in the future, I would love for whatever I do, whether it's in Kindred and Hammersmith, and I'm actually okay with that, or whether it's other kind of businesses around London, I always want to be giving out more to the community that I'm taking. I would love to be kind of thinking about what a community needs and building that thing rather than just building my thing that I think, you know, isn't, you know, and I think sort of reading what's sort of missing in a community, what is preventing people from coming together. A lot of spaces in London, it's quite interesting, a lot of spaces around the world are built for cars. You know, the quickest way for a car to get from A to B rather than people. So people kind of feel very lost in those spaces, and it's super interesting once you start looking at it in those terms. And so, you know, there's something about like kind of contributing to the city makeup, or to, you know, other cities. But for me, I would see success, if you ask me, in like 10 years time, like, do you feel like you've done what you wanted to do? I would be happy if people associated my business or businesses with contributing to the community and creating a beautiful safe space for people to come together and connect, not about just taking. That's just how I'm built. That doesn't appeal to me in any way.
And so then, so, from where you stand and everything that you've done and everything that you would like to achieve in the future, how do you define courage?
I think courage for me is doing something that people perhaps wouldn't expect you to do. I think it's doing something that's hard and against the grain. I think it's about contributing, honestly. I think contributing when it's hard to contribute. And I guess what I mean by that is when everyone else is taking and, you know, serving themselves and feeling like they need to self-preserve, that's the time when you give more. And I think that's a scary time to give, and it's a scary time to give out, and give of yourself. But I do think that it's important. And I think that the world is going to be a very dire place if we just keep taking from the world, from the earth, from each other. We have to think about giving. And I think it's hard to do that. And that takes courage in it. But I do think it's about contributing when you feel a sense of scarcity and fear for yourself. I think that is, yeah, for me, that's what I think of.
Thank you so much, Anna, for creating a space that welcomes everyone with an open heart and creating an environment that's not extractive, but instead fuels conversation, connection, and a sense of community at a time when we need to pull together to forge a flourishing future. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you, Lee.
Take care.
Thanks, you too. Bye.
Thanks, Anna, for showing us what conscious hospitality and co-working can look like for creating better times ahead for people and the planet. You can find out more about Anna's work on www.wearekindred.com and follow her on Instagram at @LondonKindred. Thank you, Brave New Girl Media, for producing and sourcing the guests for the show, and to you for listening. I hope today's story inspires you to step into the spotlight and show how you too are positively impacting the world. Take care, choose courage, and see you next time.